In the New Testament, there's a discussion between Jesus and his disciples, and it's toward the end of his life in that last week before he was crucified. And he says to his disciples, you know, that the world's going to persecute you. Don't imagine for a moment that you're going to be able to bring to people this message, which is so radically different from the world as they perceive it. He was speaking specifically then of this revolution in the Jewish community that he was bringing, of a whole new way of looking at reality. Even here, in our more advanced time on the planet, the idea that our true life experience is internal and not external, and that everything external is just incidental to our experience of consciousness, this is a very radical thought. And Jesus says to his disciples, don't imagine that people are just going to say, oh, how happy I am that you're telling me that the entire basis of my life is wrong and needs to be shifted. Human nature is not like that. I mean, he knew, in fact, that the priests who were in charge of the temple were about to put him to death. I mean, that's how happy they were to hear that he was there, is they were going to crucify him. And the world will despise you, and that's one of the ways that you'll be able to tell that you're one of my disciples. But then he adds to that, but be of good cheer, he says, for I have conquered the world. And I've always so just enjoyed, it's hard to get from the Bible as it is written, the fact that Jesus probably had a very good sense of humor, because all great masters have a very good sense of humor, because they see things in proper proportion, in proper perspective. I remember once I've always sort of had a quick wit, and I like to make fun of things. Some of my jokes are better than others, but it's an inclination that I have. I was standing with Swami Kriyananda once we were in Hawaii, we were standing on the balcony of the condo we were staying in. You could see the ocean, and then there was the swimming pool we were looking at. It's a very tiny pool, and there was sort of a white foam on the pool, and Swamiji sort of asked, what's that white foam? And I just said, white caps, like that, you know, like the ocean surf. It was a ridiculous comment, but I didn't even think. It just came out of my mouth like that. And then just reflectively, I said to Swamiji, what is humor? Where does it come from? And he said, to a certain extent, he didn't want to give me too much credit in the moment, but he said, to a certain extent, humor is a very spiritual quality, because in order to be able to make a joke, you have to be able to stand back a little bit from what's happening. And instead of just seeing it in its serious pedestrian manner, you see a little twist, a little sort of shift in the way things are going, and then suddenly a whole new way of looking at it comes in. And that, of course, is the fundamental principle of the spiritual path, is that we're walking along and it looks like a very solid universe, and it looks like we're born and we grow old and we should acquire things, and that's where our happiness comes from. It seems obvious, doesn't it? Except it isn't. It's all completely different than that. It's really a universe based entirely on consciousness. And even our experience of all those conditions of our lives really is an experience that only takes place within our consciousness. And that's not to say that those events don't matter or aren't, as Yogananda put it so brilliantly, real on their own level. And this is where the practical side of it comes in. You can't just pretend that it's not there, that you don't have to earn a living, that you don't have to raise your children, that you don't have to comb your hair and brush your teeth. You have to do all of those things, even though it's all just an interplay of light and shadow. But on the level of the dream, it's really happening. And we have to relate, as Yogananda again put it so practically, we have to relate to every level of reality on its own level. So if the house payment has to be made, you have to make the house payment. That's the level on which it's done. If you have the power, as some of the great masters do, to materialize what you need, then you don't have to work for a living anymore. But if you can do that, you'll know that. You don't have to write, you know, you don't have to ask. Mozart, who started writing symphonies when he was just a child and always knew how to write great music, was approached by a young composer and asking him how to write, how do you write a symphony? And Mozart said, well, you start with the simpler pieces, just a few instruments, and you put these together, and then you write a few pieces like that, and then you progress. And then the young composer protested. He said to Mozart, but that's not how you did it. You just started writing in with symphonies. Mozart said, yes, but I didn't have to ask anyone how to do it. So if you know, you know. And if you don't, you have to relate to every level of reality on its own level and behave appropriately. Interestingly, in Autobiography of a Yogi, when Yogananda was being trained by Sri Yukteswar, one of Sri Yukteswar's succinct dictums was learn to behave. And Yogananda said he had unfortunately been raised thinking that his spiritual dedication excused a certain carelessness in pretty much every other area. And Sri Yukteswar was assiduously, step by step, correcting that misimpression, as Yogananda describes it, and teaching him to relate to every level of reality as is appropriate for that. To lock the ashram gate, as I was talking a few weeks ago, or whatever it is to be. At the same time, we must always keep a perspective. And I was keep talking about that perspective from the point of view of humor, which is a very valid way to think about it. But we must also keep a perspective that it is only on its own level of reality that it's even there. And that the more we can develop ourselves spiritually, and the more we can make real, and not merely just sort of airy-fairy ideas like this, an actual experience of more and more profound levels of reality, the more everything that we do begins to take on a richer and a more bliss-filled reality. So here is Jesus describing to his disciples, and they didn't know how close the end of his life was. They didn't know how horrific the experience of his arrest and crucifixion was going to be for them, but Jesus himself knew. And they didn't know at that time either that almost all of them would face great difficulties and martyrdom for their faith. They didn't know any of that, but Jesus knew it. And so he wanted them to at least to be able to look back and realize, oh yes, the Master was talking to us about this. You know, much of what happens in our spiritual life, we don't really understand exactly in the moment that it happens. But as our perspective expands, we look back and we see, oh yes, the seeds of that were always there. I was speaking to a young devotee, young in physical years, recently, about various ambitions that he had and desires that he had. Actually, he was talking to me more about how they were falling away, but things that he'd hoped to do here and there. And my answer to him was, I found it so interesting in my own life that when I came to the spiritual path, truthfully, I had no ambitions. In fact, that was the difficulty. That there was nothing in life that I felt was worth giving my energy to. And I knew that I had a tremendous amount of energy to give, but I had no place to put it. In a humorous way, I called myself a fanatic without a cause to die for, which is a very uncomfortable position for a fanatic to be in. And it was a very uncomfortable position, and I made light of it to keep myself from going completely crazy from the anxiety created by it. And I was thinking a moment ago, I forgot to say it, one of the characteristics Swamiji has often pointed out of the fanatical temperament is that it's humorless, and that you rarely meet a fanatic with a sense of humor, because the nature of fanaticism is that you're so close and so committed to this one little reality that you have no perspective. And you can't make jokes about it because nothing is funny because there's only one point of view. You can't switch your perspective. So I wasn't really a fanatic because I was able to make a joke about fanaticism. But nonetheless, that was the feeling that I had, that there was all this energy that wanted to be given and no place to give it. When I met Swami Kriyananda, I had both an extremely intuitive beyond reason response to his very presence and to the state of consciousness I perceived in him, which is, to use a phrase that Swami himself was using recently, a heart's knowing. But then it was very nicely supported by reason, because not only was the path he described and the path he was walking and leading at that point one of the inner change of consciousness, which is what I was seeking, but he was founding a community and a retreat. And that little point meant so much to me, because it wasn't just seeking for oneself, but from the very beginning we were also giving to others. And so the whole picture was right there, and I was able to just step into it without hesitation. And all these 4 decades later, I've never hesitated ever on it, because it's been exactly what I'd intuited that it was going to be. But again, going back to this conversation with my friend, but interestingly, in all these years, I found that by first giving my life to God, by first giving myself to self-realization and bringing that light to others, that every other inclination that I had, every little potential talent or potential interest or possibility of enjoyment, every single one of them, you just sort of stand there in the one beam and it all just works out for you. You know, you get to do everything that you want to do. Even for a period of time, I got to be a political activist. I got to carry a briefcase and wear shoes that clicked on the marble floor. You know, marching through, I mean, admittedly, I was a tiny little fish in a tiny little pond in Nevada County, you know, in the early 80s, when it was still quite a small place, and it was just a very little thing, but I got to carry the briefcase and go to the supervisors' meetings and speak up and fight for causes I believed in. Ananda made an effort at that time. We were trying to get our land use decisions into our own hands and out of the hands of our neighbors who were not supportive of what we were trying to do. So a friend of ours, one of the girls in the community, Dallas Atkins, was an attorney. The one entity, the one small entity in the United States that has control over its own land use decisions is a city, a municipality. And we researched it, and we actually made a very serious effort to turn Ananda Village into a California city, which was marvelously fun. because we were just, I mean, even now at least we look a little like something. Then we looked like nothing at all. We were just a farm with a few little houses scattered around. But, you know, law is law. And if you can just kind of put yourself in it. So I got to be, as my friend Ananta called me, Madam the Mayor. He would salute me every morning when I came down, you know, walked over the hill from Ayodhya. Then I was not carrying my briefcase or wearing my shoes that clicked. I was in my bean boots and the whole thing. But I would always come over the hill, and he would see me coming, and he would line up all the gardeners, and he would have them go, "Good morning, Madam the Mayor," like that. And then I would go to Nevada County and present it as if it were serious. You know, this is a serious proposition. I talk about sewer and police and fire departments, and we failed completely, totally, because it wasn't really a very good idea, but it was a good adventure. That's a whole other story. The end of that. I tell that story in the book I wrote about Swamiji, if you're curious. It was really quite fun. Anyway, the end point of all of that is that seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. Now, the power to really commit yourself with faith to that principle is a very subtle one. And this is what our reading is about today. Our reading today is about truth and grace, about shifting from just the mere external expression of good principles. You see, there's this very subtle shift that most of us as devotees have to learn to make. Because naturally speaking, most of us are pretty nice. You know, we're sort of past the point of devoting our lives to revenge or having really hateful attitudes toward other people or getting, you know, pleasure from evil. That's, for the most part, that's not our temperament. So we're not struggling just to be good. And there's a great danger on the spiritual path that because we're already good, we'll just be content with that. And one of the great advantages, in fact, I would say, one of the reasons why satsang and fellowship and spiritual community is really essential to our spiritual path, it's really essential to making spiritual progress, is because if you're too isolated, it's too easy to feel that even though you're very short, because everybody around you is shorter than you, you've actually attained some height. You understand? You know, because you can sort of wander around among people who are not even necessarily bad people, but just not thinking in terms of consciousness. And if you're thinking in terms of consciousness at all, you can get a rather distorted perception of how much you've actually accomplished. It's absolutely essential on the spiritual path to be at least in very close relationship to individuals who are higher up the mountain than you, and to always understand how really high the mountaintop is. Swami Kriyananda has remarked to us that waking up from a deep sleep into a wakeful state. The last few weeks on Sunday morning, after years and years of living the same life in the same rhythm, there's a kind of like a subconscious sense of Sunday morning arriving. And so I'll wake up on Sunday morning, I'll always know it's Sunday morning and what it means. Except lately, because I've been traveling a little bit, so the rhythm of the week gets confused. And I wake up on Sunday morning and I make all these plans because I think it's Monday or Thursday or Tuesday. And there'll be this sudden realization, this happens in a matter of a minute or so. But you're just dead asleep. And then all of a sudden you wake up and this whole reality has to assert itself. Swamiji says the difference between waking up from being dead asleep into this world doesn't even hint, as how he put it, of the difference of waking from ordinary bright waking consciousness into super consciousness. Enjoyable, Master called it, beyond imagination of expectancy. This is such a brilliant use of words. As a wordsmith, I just love that. Beyond imagination of expectancy. So one of the jobs that the masters have for us is to constantly tell you, you're doing fine, you're doing great, you're really making good progress, but you're not there yet. You've got a ways to go. There's so much more that you don't even know about. And the masters also, God himself, Divine Mother, they're very loyal to our spiritual potential. In many ways, they're much more loyal to it than we are, which is really a grace, although it doesn't always feel like that. Because we ourselves make our plans. And we're good people. So we make good plans. You know, we're going to have a nice house. We're going to have a big family. We're going to be generous in this way. We're going to be successful in our career. We're going to do this and that. We have all these nice plans. But Divine Mother wants us to be blissful and free forever. So she makes other plans. And she makes plans that are based on a perspective that we don't always have. And really often we don't get the joke. That's part of the problem. You know, we don't understand. One of my friends who had a lot of troubles in his life said, I know this is funny, but I can't quite step enough outside of it to see that it is. You know, it's just not funny to me yet. He said, I know that someday it will be. There's that very sweet story that Swami Kriyananda tells in The Path about the desert, the house in the desert where Master lived, and that one of the disciples decided he would fix the roof, and he pulled off all the roofing that was on there, and he had this plan with chicken wire and concrete and all these nails going through the roof and so on, and Master was very dubious about the efficacy of this plan, but the disciple was determined, so Master said, well, go ahead and do it. So at the point in which the roof was completely stripped off and there were all these nails driven through it all the way through, this huge desert rainstorm came, and of course, water ran through many of those holes, and inside the house, the disciples were putting buckets out and trying to save all the furniture and so on. But it never rained at all. Even though there were just as many holes, in the study where Master was doing his writings and in his bedroom, except Master was lying on his bed without his shirt on, and just at the end of the rainstorm, a single drop came and bounced right off his tummy like that. You know, even Divine Mother has a sense of humor. I'm going to keep your bedroom dry, but just so you'll know, I'm paying attention to you. You know, these little touches like that. There's the Masters are enjoying this life. They're enjoying the possibility of our liberation. Swami Kriyananda said something so helpful that I've drawn on again and again, and perhaps it will be helpful to you. He says, even now, when he sees people suffering, whether it's a homeless person on the street or a crowd of beggars in India or an individual going through a trial, the thought that immediately comes to his mind is, how much greater then will be their sense of bliss when that bliss finally descends to them. Because of the suffering, because of the contrast, because of what they've had to go through to finally win to that final victory. And his consciousness is of that moment of final victory and how extremely sweet it will be instead of the road that we have to travel to get there. You see? It's all in our perspective. This is why Jesus is telling his disciples with a much clearer vision than they have that a great deal is going to happen to you, and it's going to be very difficult because the world, he said, he uses the word in the Bible, because you're my disciples, the world will hate you. It's a very harsh word, isn't it? Just very harsh. Swamiji at one point, I can't remember which song it was, but he had, the line was, go on alone. Let them despise you, go on alone. And it only lasted for a short time because it was really hard to say, let them despise you, go on alone. You know, it just like, it was too much of a contrast. People couldn't use that word in that context. But when I said to Swamiji, sir, that's just so harsh. And he just looked at me like this. They will. Just, they will. You know, when you really threaten people with a higher truth, sometimes, well, look at the crucifixion of Jesus. Every great saint is persecuted. In fact, Peter Caddy, who was the founder of Findhorn community in Scotland, they had a cycle, and this was in the 70s or 80s, I don't remember when. They worked extremely hard to build a beautiful temple on their property there, and someone came and set it on fire. It was destroyed by arson. Just people resenting what they were doing. You bring in light, the darkness doesn't want to be obliterated. It tries. And so Peter had come to visit Swami Kriyananda, and I was serving them tea, and they were talking together. And Peter was talking about, oh yes, we worked very hard on that temple, and then it burned down. You know, it was burned down. Swami talked about all the different things that had happened to Ananda and how many obstacles we'd met and all of that. And these two men are just sort of cheerfully chuckling over it, you know, over a cup of tea. And Peter says, yes, he said, if they're not persecuting you, you're not putting out enough light. If you're not putting out enough light for the darkness to notice that you're a threat, you need to be putting out more. Isn't that just... And then they laughed merrily together. It just didn't mean anything to them. Because you relate to reality on its own level, but the real dedication is to God alone. And if God wants to teach you through this method, that's fine. Another moment like that was when Swami Kriyananda was in Rishikesh, India, and he met Swami Chidananda. Chidananda's now passed off. That Chidananda's now gone from the planet. He was the spiritual heir to the organization founded by Swami Shivananda, who was one of the best known and most respected of Indian yogis, a contemporary of Master. So both these men, Swami Kriyananda representing Yogananda, Chidananda representing Shivananda, were essentially peers. And they have met each other intermittently through the 50 or 60 years that they've been disciples. And their bond, they have a very deep bond, even though it's not externally expressed that much. But they were meeting after quite a long time. And there was a group of us on pilgrimage. And when we first arrived, Somehow Chidananda's disciples thought that the two men were going to meet alone, but we clung like glue to Kriyananda. We weren't about to be separated from him. And the Swamis didn't care, so they allowed all of us to sort of come in. So Chidananda and Swami there are sitting next to each other. And Chidananda looks at Swamiji with just the sweet smile, and he says, "And so, how are all the Ananda communities around the world?" And Swami says, "Fine," like that. And then he says, "And then how is the International Divine Life Society?" And Chidananda says, "Fine," like that. And then they both go, "Ah, ha, ha, ha." And there was just this extraordinary sense of, you know, we do all this work, we're the founders of these big organizations, we have all of these responsibilities. But the only thing that's happening is the inner reality. Later on, that was my perception, and I had the opportunity later actually to ask Swami Kriyananda, you know, that's how it looked to me. And it was sort of like they were teasing each other to sort of see, who are you after all of this? I'm reminded in this sense, one of my friends, a married couple, the husband has a great sense of humor, and you know, even among the best of couples, sometimes tensions rise, and the two of them started this little bickering about something, and they were just getting into it, and then he looked at her and he said, "I'm not caught yet, are you?" Like that. You know, it's like, it started to get me, but I'm not going to allow this to get me. Swami Kriyananda and Chidananda are saying to each other, you know, have you identified with anything that's happened to you? No, no, no. Nothing but the bliss, nothing but the bliss. And this is what, when the Bible talks to us, be of good cheer, and what the whole point of saying this is, I noticed at the end of the Gita reading, the exact same phrase, be of good cheer. You know, give your heart to God. Give yourself to God. Pay no attention to all the rest of it. Let everything else go. Don't worry. You'll get to take care of it. You can't push it away if you haven't truly transcended it. But you deal with it by first giving your heart to God. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. And first give your heart to God, to the truth, to the grace of the divine. And then be of good cheer. Because everything else will just follow from that. Some of it will be totally fun, and some of it will be a living nightmare. There's just no other way around it. You know, let them despise you. When you start putting out the light, the darkness challenges you. When you decide you want to be a champion, you can't just keep competing against first graders. You know, if you can win the race against people who are six, that's really not going to prove anything, right? You have to actually be able to keep elevating our capacity to be of good cheer, no matter what comes. But also what's so sweet about that, isn't it? Don't worry about what it looks like. Don't worry about all the ups and downs and seemingly not working outnesses of things. Just be of good cheer. Stay in the light. And God's grace will come, which will give you the power to be of good cheer, to be in that light, to be who we really are, bliss alone. God bless you.